Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Jake, I know people are just amazed that Jeff Hardy and Darby Allin survived some of those big spots in that match, but everybody listening should be more amazed that I survived Dynamite. We got a tornado warning on the phone during the show. I mean, new storms are coming, but like it's like my phone is flashing tornado warning. I turn on the news, and it's like there's someone literally like drawing a computer circle around my neighborhood going, if you're in this area, there's a tornado, radar-indicated tornado headed your way. Take shelter. But I have survived. The power grid has survived. Unlike many people here in the Twin Cities in Minnesota, I have power. I'm able to do a live podcast here, and I'm thankful for that. Jake, what'd you think of my bravery in surviving in my basement, but more pertinent, the Jeff Hardy, Darby Allin stunt fest, which Jim Ross called one of the best matches in Dynamite history?
Well, I'm glad you didn't have to take any Jeff Hardy or Darby Allin like bumps around your basement when the tornado rolled through. But yeah. That was a wild match. Yeah, there wasn't anything. I mean, other than the big ladder spot where Darby essentially just jumped onto chairs at ringside, there wasn't anything that looked like downright dangerous. But that one, I mean, man, if he would have landed just, a foot or something further to the right, I mean, he would have been like spying right on the top of those chairs. That would have been a really bad spot.
He said before the match that he told Tony Khan, throw out the rules. And fans want to see us go to the hospital, and I want to go to the hospital. Darby's weird. one, that he wants to go to the hospital, but two, that he thinks his fans want to see him go to the hospital. It's a weird mindset as a wrestler to think that the goal of a match is having to go to the hospital. I mean, I get it's his personality, it's his gimmick and all that, but like, how about just winning? You know, it's an Owen Hart tournament, and maybe instead of I get he's saying I'll do anything to win and move on. That's sort of implied, and I get that. But that ladder spot coming out of the commercial break was crazy. I was worried they were going to be at split screen when they did the spot off the ladder, and fortunately they timed it well. I don't know if they had someone helping them out with cues, but by the time they did the spot off the ladder, and that just
it did come together pretty oddly though, because you had Hardy on top of the ladder or pretty close to it, and then Darby pulled him down, and then he kind of went groin first into the top rope. And then he had to, like, fall to the floor and crawl himself onto the chairs most of the way for the catch. And so I think most of the crowd was probably distracted by Darby ascending to the top of the ladder. So, I mean, it wasn't completely obvious. But if you were looking at it, if you go back and watch it a second time, you're like, why? You know, why would in the course of competition would he put himself in that position? But, you know, it's just pro wrestling. So it is what it is. But for the most part, I really enjoyed the match, but I was kind of half cringing throughout the entire thing.
Yeah. I mean, it is a dream match for two wrestlers known for crazy bumps. I mean, if people have only seen Jeff Hardy's WWE work, there's plenty of big spots going back to TLC matches. But it's like some of the stuff he did in TNA, Jake, is way more. Like Jeff, I can't remember what pay-per-view it was and how long ago it was. I just have this memory of him climbing. What did he climb? Like what? It was on like the upper left corner of my screen on the pay-per-view. Like I had this visual image of him climbing something really high, and I was just like, don't do this. And he did, and he leaped off. I can't even like get too specific about it because I think I was just like cringing and looking away. Don't do this for us. Like Hardy's stunt bump taking is more than just what WWE and now AEW fans are seeing.
Oh yeah, he's done some incredibly dangerous spots over the years, and I mean clearly he inspired Darby Allin, who is of the same. Essentially the same mind, it seems. You know, he was willing to go to any extreme necessary. And it seemed like winning the match was sort of secondary to Darby to having this kind of experience with Jeff Hardy in the ring, which I mean, I don't know how that makes you feel about the tournament match in and of itself, but it certainly made for, you know, an interesting promo to send, you know, to send you into the show for something to look forward to in the main event. It's like, are these guys really going to kill themselves? And certainly they did. I mean, they lived up to what they promised.
Well, what do you think about the decision to have Hardy win the way that he won, and what does it say about where the tournament goes from here?
I mean, to me, it seems like with the way that Double or Nothing stacks up so close to Forbidden Door and how the Forbidden Door show, at least the limited storytelling they've done thus far, seems to be focused around the Bullet Club and Undisputed Elite, I think the storytelling just kind of plays itself out. I think Cole most likely ends up winning this tournament. That would be my prediction. And I think the Hardy Cole match to in the semifinals will, like, you know, will spring them out forward into whatever is going to be happening at the Forbidden Door show that surrounds, you know, the Undisputed Elite.
I was thinking, you know, there's a lot of, Owen winners at the Owen Hart tournament on the men's side, or, you know, a handful where it could be a significant moment in their career. Is it, if Cole wins, does that help elevate Cole in a way that the way he's portrayed himself, the way that AEW has portrayed him, hasn't done yet as a you know, cause I don't know. I mean, I guess I should preface or ask you first, Jake, do you think Adam Cole is at the level he was at in NXT in terms of fans perceiving him as a top singles guy?
Well, I think when he initially made the jump, you know, it was a big splash. He got an incredible reaction, and to his credit, I think he carried that forward for quite a while. But he's essentially been, you know, on the losing end of a lot of matches, you know, in terms of his feud with Adam Page. And they haven't put a title on him yet. And so I think if they don't have plans immediately to put a championship on Adam Cole, then perhaps winning this tournament is an accomplishment he can put on his resume that gives him something to talk about and maintains his heat, essentially.
Yeah. I thought there are a lot of ways they could go. Jeff Hardy has a chance to be a significant singles wrestler in AEW, not three or four years from now, but, you know, he's – the crowd reactions for the Hardys have been so strong. And with all due respect to Matt, most of those crowd reactions are for Jeff because he's new and he's always been, you know, the more athletic and more charismatic of the two. Matt's done a really nice job with his career with what he's had to work with and has been very creative and probably has worked harder than Jeff has to have the success that he's had. But that said, Jeff's the star. Jeff winning this tournament would elevate Jeff Hardy to a point where you could imagine him as a babyface going up against, say, a heel AEW champion, whether it's Hangman Turns, so he sort of hinted, you know, lean heel last week, CM Punk, who got booed tonight, and there's, you know, logical speculation, maybe ultimately he'll be a heel as a champion, or MJF down the line. Is that something that you could imagine AEW booking, and do you think it would be a prudent idea to go that course to kind of send the signal, yeah, Jeff is a major singles guy? My caveat to that is I just think the Bucks against the Hardys is much more likely, and maybe that's where you're going, you know, where you would be thinking too, and I don't think AEW should do both at once.
Yeah, I think we're going to see some tag dream matches before they try to move Jeff into, you know, into a singles run, especially near the top for a championship. And I guess Jeff seems to like he succeeds in this particular environment. When they put him in straight up wrestling matches without a lot of the shortcuts that you can take in these big stunt matches, I don't think he really thrives in that environment any longer. He certainly gets the crowd reactions, and you can never take that away from him because it seems like he's got this connection with audiences and he's a dynamic character. But I think when we're talking about matches in and around the AEW championship, I don't know if you just want a guy who succeeds in having one particular type of match kind of fill that spot at this point in his career. But I could be wrong. I mean, maybe they'll circle the wagons and get there eventually. But I think the match with the Young Bucks and, you know, the ultimately, you know, whatever confrontation takes place between, you know, the 5-on-5 stare down they had at the end of this show is the direction they're going in the near term.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, let's pause and introduce the show. And then we're going to get to an on-site correspondent who was in the building tonight. Long Island has become sort of the bizarre world for AEW, thanks to MJF. And we'll get into that with Mark, our on-site correspondent. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, May 11th, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, publisher, and founder of the long-running Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter. Paper copy subscriptions available at pwtorch.com/papercopy. We just got an annual subscription from a first-time subscriber who's in prison today. Random note that stood out. But yeah, if you're interested in looking forward to going to your mailbox once a week and getting some exclusive content and our paper copy, check that out, pwtorch.com/papercopy. And I'm also the host of this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. Those are two separate feeds, two separate logos, red logo and blue logo, my face and name on both. The post shows stream live every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. And then the full shows are available for download, of course, on demand after that on the red feed. And the blue feed features our regular podcast, pay-per-view previews, interviews, some best of shows, and more. The flagship tomorrow will feature PW Torch VIP analyst Todd Martin. So look for that Thursday night on the blue feed. You can check out a 10 years ago flashback right now on the blue feed. Jason Powell and I talking about Paul Heyman returning to Raw and managing Brock Lesnar. Kind of fun to listen to that through the lens of what has happened in the 10 years since. The other voice you hear so far on this show covering AEW Dynamite is Jake Barnett from ProWrestling.net. Jake, welcome. Welcome back to the Coast here.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, Whitney. I always appreciate being here.
Yeah, always appreciate you coming on. The phone number, if you want to give us a call and join the conversation on tonight's show, is 347-215-8558. That is 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. If you've already called in and want to be in line to join the show, push 1 on your keypad. That will flag you on the switchboard. We have more people who call and just listen in than those who flag themselves as wanting to be on the show. So it is important, if you do want to join the conversation now or as the show progresses, push 1. You can also participate through email, especially if you can't live stream the show and sit on hold and wait for us to bring you on, but you want to get an opinion or a question included in the show. The email address is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. And you can always find the live stream for these shows in case you're listening on demand but want to listen live and want to participate live. You can find the live stream at wadekellerpostshow.com. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, respectively. And also, you can find the direct link to the live stream at the top and bottom of my TV reports covering Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown on our website, pwtorch.com. And another way to find it is on Twitter, at pwtorch. Near the end of the shows, I tweet a link to the live stream. So lots of ways to find us, and if it fits your schedule, if you watch these shows live and then want to get instant reaction, we go live 5 minutes or so. Today was 10 because of the storm and having to get set up. But usually around 5 minutes after the show's end, we are live streaming and taking calls. All right. So as noted, let's bring on our outside correspondent right away here in this next segment. Mark from Long Island, welcome to the show once again as our outside correspondent.
Hey, Wade, how's it going?
Good. Now, are you still in the building, or are you driving home, or what's your location?
I'm currently driving home.
All right. So you did not stay for Rampage, or is Rampage live Friday?
No, Rampage. They were filming it. I didn't really. The only match I wanted to see was the Scorpio Sky versus Kaz match, and there wasn't a lot before that that I was willing to stay for. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Fair enough. And now we don't have to worry about spoilers with you, so that's good.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So, Mark, you know how this goes. You know, you can pass along information other than what we ask, but I do want to begin by asking you just what kind of reaction did MJF and Wardlow get? I want to get to Punk and Hangman too, but MJF and Wardlow, and because clearly MJF was going for cheers and trying to get Wardlow booed, on TV, it seemed like it succeeded, but I don't know if it succeeded like to the degree MJF was hoping for. Perhaps just like crazy standing up, booing everything Wardlow said. So I'm kind of curious in the arena what it was like, and I want to get kind of Jake's take on that too because we haven't talked about that.
So to correct your earlier comment, I'm actually from Westchester, New York. So I don't find the same appeal for MJF, but in Long Island, New York, MJF is the biggest babyface in the world. and Wardlow just happened to become the biggest heel in the world, and the cheers were as loud as they seemed, and the boos were as loud as they seemed for Wardlow.
And I admit, and I'm going to lean on Jake and even callers a little bit. As I mentioned at the top of the show, we had I was like under a tornado warning and was kind of moving my location, covering the show and taking shelter, and just wasn't able to pay as 100% attention as I usually do. But my take, and I want to, Jake, get your thoughts, and then I'll throw it back to Mark in just a second. My take is that the crowd was booing Wardlow. And standing and booing as MJF sort of sarcastically told them not to. It didn't just feel like the walls were coming down, though. What did it come across to you on TV?
Well, I guess it seemed like the crowd was just enjoying MJF hamming it up. You know, like he yeah. clearly was enjoying himself in this atmosphere of being in his hometown, being able to sort of live in this sort of bizarro environment where he gets cheered. And I think Wardlow seemed to be amused by the whole thing too. I think they knew that this was coming. I think they were hamming it up and playing into it as much as possible to get that sort of opposite world attracts sort of reaction on television. And I think it paid off because, you know, even though the crowd clearly booed Wardlow at MJF's behest, they still got fired up for the Wardlow post contract signing sort of physicality. And so I think it was just the crowd having a little fun, playing along, and knowing what their role was in this situation. And I think it came across as more sort of fun on television than it did there was some genuine crowd animosity towards Wardlow. I don't think that actually existed. It was more, the audience playing off of MJF and having a little bit of fun in the process.
Yeah, that's actually a good way to characterize, I think, my take on it, which is the crowd is having fun with it, but it wasn't like serious hatred for Wardlow. Like if, under other circumstances that those fans are going to cheer Wardlow. Mark, if you want to talk a little bit more about MJF and Wardlow, otherwise feel free to also shift to what happened with Punk and Hangman. Oh, I muted you because of some background noise. So go ahead, Mark. Sorry about that. Now you're back on.
That's all right. So before MJF came out, the guy next to me was like, yeah, MJF's the worst person in the world. And then if you didn't see, you should go back and watch. They had this Dark Side of the Ring spinoff, like
yes.
Spoof. You need to go watch that. But after that, the guy next to me was cheering MJF when MJF started coming out because it was pretty good. But MJF definitely got the biggest pop of the night. Punk definitely got the biggest heat of the night. He came out in the Islanders jersey, and I don't know if that was trying to get cheers or trying to get boos, but it didn't. Sit well with the crowd, and the crowd turned on him pretty quickly.
I can add some context there. It was a John Tavares jersey, and I believe he had previously left the Islanders to go to the Maple Leafs, which would have riled up the local crowd. I think it was intentional to try to get some heat.
I meant to look up the history of Tavares because that did seem to be what Punk was sort of drawing attention to when he came out. Spot on, Jake. That was meant to give the fans something to boo him over. And they did. Mark, was the booing of Punk similar to the booing of Wardlow just in fun, or did it feel a little different for Punk?
I would say Wardlow was more fun. This felt a little bit more, authentic.
Yeah.
But, it's hard to tell. But I will say that, like, I don't know what Hangman was saying on commentary, but after the match, it definitely felt like this was the most important he's felt in a very long time.
Jake, what do you think about that, by the way, how Hangman came across? Because unlike Mark, we got to hear Hangman on commentary. He didn't have a lot to say on commentary. He usually doesn't really overpower the segment, say, like Jericho does when he's on commentary. But when he walked to the ring and, you know, got in the face of Punk and gave him the middle finger, do you agree with Mark's assessment from in the building that Hangman felt important and a big deal there?
Yeah, I think he's gotten a boost by taking on a bit of an antagonistic personality towards CM Punk. And if I thought one thing was missing from their confrontation, it would have been a little bit of verbal jousting between the two of them. I know Hangman had gotten a chance to speak sort of uninterrupted last week, and it seemed like this was the opportunity for Punk to do the same, essentially. But I am looking forward to them, you know, finally trading some barbs verbally, because I think that would further escalate this feud, and they don't have that many TV episodes to do it, so I'm hoping next week is the week. But I think this is the best they've done to elevate Page and make him feel like a centerpiece champion since he kind of won that title from Omega. And unfortunately, it seems like he's always kind of faded into the background in between title defenses, and then that's been an unfortunate aspect of his title reign.
All right, Mark, I'll throw back to Jake, do you have anything you want to ask Mark?
I guess other than what we've already gone over, I was sort of surprised that there wasn't as much of a reaction as I expected for some of the other tournament matches. Like, it seemed like the opening match with Harwood, and Cole, after the entrances, it seemed like the crowd sort of quieted down quite a bit. And the same for the Tony Storm and Jamie Hayter match later on. I couldn't tell if it was a disinterested silence or if it was, you know, we're actually into this match and we're giving it, you know, the proper attention kind of reaction. So I'm curious what that was like in the building.
My fault again. Let me unmute Mark so we get a clear signal. Yeah, go ahead, Mark.
So before I get to that, during the Punk match, there was a fun F your pizza chant during the match. And then at one point he responded to say, no, F your pizza. So, yeah, that was fun. But, yeah, during the Cole and Dax match, the crowd was actually pretty hot. I know a lot of people, like, around me were thinking that was probably the best match of the night. But during the women's tournament match, that was definitely dead. And then the crowd came back alive during the Hardy versus Darby match.
Jake, anything else you want to ask?
No, nothing else comes to mind. Thanks, though.
So, yeah, Mark, I want to throw to you and ask how your experience tonight differs from how many Dynamites have you attended?
This was my second time.
Okay, yeah.
I would say
and,
that.
And how was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, how was it different?
I feel like this time was a little bit better of a show. I don't know if it's just more people that I'm interested were actually a part of it or, like, wrestling. You know, I was definitely interested in Adam Cole. You know, I'm a big Sting fan, so it was nice to see Sting come out. I mean, the crowd was probably about the same. It was probably about, like, 70% full. But, yeah, I felt it was better of a show than last time.
And did you sense any difference in the crowd in any way in terms of the makeup, the enthusiasm, anything like that?
So last time I was up in the nosebleeds, like in the 200 sections. This time I was like right across from the hard cam the whole time. I was able to notice like there were some kids there. You know, a couple of them had MJF scarves, which was funny to see. You know, there was definitely a lot more kids than I noticed last time.
What was your favorite part of the show?
Probably that opening match with Adam Cole and Dax. you know, from in the arena, the crowd was pretty into it. There was, you know, everything that they did pretty much got a reaction, and, you know, it was pretty enjoyable. And then also the Punk stuff with them. And also, you know, I can't lie, MGF was pretty entertaining. Yeah, MGF definitely knows how to work a room. My girlfriend was a little... Sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, my girlfriend was all disappointed that Danhausen got squashed pretty quickly. But besides that, I had a good time.
I was about to bring up Danhausen and Hook. It felt like one of the bigger reactions for Hook lately. I'm not saying it was at the level of where he was, you know, during the first, you know, few magical weeks of the Hook mania or whatever. But man, the crowd reaction for him coming out and shaking hands with Danhausen and then leaving, it just felt like the crowd was mega into Hook. Talk about how the reaction to him compared to everybody else who was over on the show.
Yeah, he's definitely up there in reactions. I'd probably say he's top. MGF definitely got the biggest reaction. Moxley got a big reaction. And then maybe Hook. You know, everyone, especially since he's from, like, the Long Island, New York area, he's always going to get a big reaction. So, yeah, I'd say he's probably top three.
We had someone mention this last time we had an Onside correspondent. What was the way that, if you were there in time and remember, how the announcers were introduced and what was the reaction to them?
So I didn't get to see the Dark Elevation announce crew get announced, but you know, they before Dynamite they announced Excalibur and then Tony and then JR. JR got a nice reaction. Last time we were there, JR was like having his surgeries and he was out at that point, so we weren't able to see him. So he got a nice reaction. Tony, you know, Tony Schiavone always gets a decent reaction. Excalibur's kind of got the golf clap.
Sure. Yep. And how about the reaction to Jericho in terms of one, just sort of legacy star pop, but also cheering him or booing him ironically or booing him and the whole assembly of the Appreciation Society. Like, was it intense heat, ironic heat, but we like you, or mostly cheers still?
Mostly cheers. Everyone sang the song and had a good time. I think he's more over as entertainment as over as a heel.
Yeah, that's kind of what my question was getting at. Jungle Boy and Ricky Starks, talk about how their crowd reactions compared to other featured babyfaces and heels on this show, and how the crowd then reacted in the post-match to different people kind of coming out one at a time, including, say, Keith Lee.
I saw Jungle Boy come out, and then I ran to the restroom. But he got a decent reaction. And then, you know, towards the end, there were some, like, rumblings that people thought that this was going to be the point where Christian turned on him. But then you know, they all cheered when they hugged. Keith Lee got a decent reaction. I still don't see much in Keith Lee at this point. I understand why people think he's going to be a big thing, but I don't think it's there.
Yeah. Yep. Jake, do you think of anything else you want to bring up?
I think you kind of ran through most of everything that I would have asked, but yeah, thanks for asking.
Yep. So, Mark, anything else you want to add about your experience before, during, or after the show from being there in person, things we might not have seen on TV, or the game ops, as they say, how the show flowed from an in-arena perspective, or anything else?
Yeah, I mean, it all flowed pretty quickly. There was only a couple of times where you noticed it was in break. Justin Roberts, like, acknowledged a few people in the crowd that had, like, signs that said it was the birthday and then encouraged everyone to say happy birthday to them. There was a whole bunch of Dark Elevation matches. I'd say the biggest one that got reaction was the Gun Club teamed with the Acclaimed to fight a bunch of random people. If you watch Jersey Shore, J-Wa's fiance was in that match. besides that, Brandon Cutler fought one of the Bear Country guys, which I found funny. He still wears his jumpsuit to the ring instead of actual like ring gear. and then he sprays himself with the ice after. That's pretty much. But we had a pretty good time. My girlfriend had a long day, so she's asleep in the car next to me. overall, it was an enjoyable experience.
Cool. Well, Mark, I appreciate you calling in.
Yeah, not a problem. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All right. Frank Pettiani, who's a PW Torch VIP contributor and PWTorch.com writer who previews Dynamite and Rampage every week, did attend. He doesn't think he's going to call in, but he might. That was the he is staying for Rampage. So if anything big happens on Rampage, we'll give you a spoiler warning. But I am DMing him and keeping in touch with him about what is happening as we speak, still in the arena in Long Island. But we'll one way or the other probably get a write-up from him for PWTorch.com, even if he doesn't have time with his schedule after the show to call in. But he hasn't ruled out calling in. I guess some of that depends on what happens on Rampage. So let's get to callers. We welcome everybody who's listening live to join the conversation. Our number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And you can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. If you want to be an on-site correspondent, by the way, let me know by email at that email address, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Put the date in the city in the subject line. That just kind of helps me stay organized with all the emails that come in. And I'll be in touch beforehand and arrange having you join us, just as Mark did for the second time as our Dynamite on-site correspondent. And you can call us even if you have, or especially if you have, a sleeping girlfriend in the car during the on-site correspondent report like Mark did. All right, so we're going to begin with Larry in Beardstown, Illinois, calling us about Dynamite. Larry, thanks for calling. What stood out on Dynamite for you tonight?
Hey, I wanted to say first off that, first, thanks for taking the call. Second off, one of the things that may not seem like much, but as a little bit of an older wrestling fan, I think it's nice that to see Martha Hart there and it looked like she was legitimately having a good time. I thought that was really nice.
Jake, do you know if she had attended any wrestling shows before this one? I'm trying to just think if...
Nothing jumps to mind immediately. I think she had stayed away from wrestling entirely.
Yeah.
Because of how disgusted she was with everything that of course, you know, understandably so. But
she wouldn't have gone to a WWE show, obviously. But I was wondering if there was some sort of like Owen Hart tribute indie show or something where maybe she appeared. And I can't think of. So I bring that up only because like that had to be an emotional moment for her because clearly she attended wrestling events when her, you know, late husband Owen Hart wrestled.
Recall. Brett over the years had said that she didn't even want any of Owen's name and likeness being associated with wrestling outside of, you know, the charity. And so I think it was, you know, what her and you know, the charity and Tony Khan put together for, you know, for this tournament must have brought her back to the table. So it is great to see her, you know, back involved again, because I know, you know, obviously very hard feelings about how that whole situation went down.
Yeah, I mean, just on a personal level, if she had not attended a show since Owen's death, I imagine this was an emotional night for her. But perhaps, I don't want to speak for her, but perhaps sort of a release, a good feeling that she could be at a wrestling show and hopefully feel good about the organization and how they're handling the Owen Hart tournament and his legacy and publicizing the foundation. Excalibur is good about plugging it pretty consistently during the TV shows. Cutting to some reaction shots from her, added to, I think what for, you know, people who were Owen Hart fans and followed his career in real time, or perhaps have caught up on his career after the fact, having her there, you know, made the tournament feel, not only fully endorsed, but a level more special in terms of Owen's memory. So Larry, back to you. Appreciate you bringing her up.
Okay. And secondly, I think, And I personally would kind of like to see it because I think he's better as a heel. I think that might be the slow start of a Christian heel turn, that little thing that we saw near the end of the Jungle Boy match tonight. And I wouldn't mind that. I just hope they don't turn it into a quagmire fiasco like they've done with Julia Hart and the Varsity Blondes.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Jake, what do you think about that? What do you think about what you saw tonight with Christian and just broadening it out? I think it's obvious they've been, you know, hinting at and milking Christian turning heel for quite a while. I think it's much more likely that happens than, you know, Orton turning on Riddle, as people, you know, just keep assuming is inevitable. I think with Christian it is nearly inevitable. What do you think about that storyline and when they pull the trigger and what we saw tonight?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if he's instrumental in how, you know, the Jurassic Express end up losing those tag titles. I mean, I guess it maybe appeared like we might be getting a triple threat for those championships based on the, you know, the three team stare down we got on this show, and maybe that'll happen as soon as Double or Nothing. But I definitely anticipate him turning sooner rather than later. It really does feel like they've achieved about as much as they can with Jungle Boy as a tag team act at this point. I think the ceiling has been reached there, and I think Christian turning heel would be a very positive development for him as well. And a feud between him and Jungle Boy would be a lot of fun. I mean, it seems like eons ago that, you know, Christian was beating Kenny Omega, and he's done almost nothing since then, and it seems like a real shame. He kind of came in way ahead of a huge influx of talent, and he's just kind of continually been, you know, shuffled off the board since then, and so it'd be nice to see some development for him as a character.
Yeah, Christian went from being overpushed a bit to being underpushed a bit, you know, I mean, Christian is, you know, really good on the mic. He's really good in the ring, and he's got, you know, some star power, some legacy star power for everything that he's been involved in over the years. And then you have his, you know, ex-partner Edge, who's a really big deal as a heel in WWE. And, you know, Jay, you know, Christian is watching that and in imagining, what can I do as a heel? You know, he and Edge have been competitive friends over the years, and I'm sure Christian would love to do something that, in the AEW ecosystem, competes favorably and compares favorably to what Edge is doing in WWE. You know, a lot of wrestlers definitely enjoy going
there. AEW already has enough spooky factions, so I hope it's a little a little different than that, for sure.
Well, I'm hoping Christian is aware of the criticism of Edge, and he decides not to go that direction, since it's, you know, a lot of people are kind of rolling their eyes at Edge.
I wouldn't mind just a straight up singles run from Christian. I don't think he needs to have hangers on, at least at the current time.
And he could just say, hey, when I walk through the locker room, everybody looks at me like I'm a big star. I outwork everyone. And people come up to me, and when they wrestle me, they say they thought they knew how to wrestle until they wrestled me, and then they realized what a real wrestler was like. That could be a heel character right there, except that's quoting him almost exactly when he showed up as a baby face, which I thought was off-putting. He doesn't have to invent a heel character. He just has to watch tapes, watch clips of himself when he first showed up, and acted pretty full of himself and unself-aware of how he's coming across, and that can be a good authentic heel character for him. Larry, back to you for other topics regarding Dynamite.
Okay, the last match of the show was a real car wreck in a mostly good way, though. The top of the ladder flip dive that Darby did was flat nuts. It looked like he got almost all chairs on that one. I agree with what you guys said. If it was about a foot or less over the other way, we would not be talking about Darby Allin for quite a while. But there was a move in the match that I just liked it because it seemed just simple and effective, and I haven't seen it done in a while. It was when Jeff Hardy did the old Eddie Gilbert hot shot, you know, Midnight Express flapjack move on with Darby Allin onto the metal ring steps. I thought that was, of all the things, I thought that looked really good.
Jake, we talked a little bit about it earlier, but anything else you want to add about Darby and Jeff, and not only what Larry's bringing up in terms of the big spots, but also the hype going into it, the video package, the way that it was framed. Did AEW do justice and did Darby and Jeff do justice to that match and what it means?
I think they did a pretty good job. I wouldn't have mind, a little bit longer video package that was maybe split up and played a couple of times throughout the show. That really sort of told the story and set you up for the main event. If there's one thing that I think is missing more often than not in AEW, is they give you 20 or 30 seconds of a video package for matches that have a lot of stakes or matches that have a lot of potential because of previous story interactions, and they never quite flesh it out to the point that you're happy with. And I think they did a decent job with this one, but it came together pretty quickly, and I think if the match hadn't lived up to expectations, I might be a little bit more down on the way they built up to it, but I think the talent overcame any lackluster booking that may have been in place there.
Yeah. Larry, anything else you want to bring up?
No, thanks for taking my call, and I think I might paraphrase Gordon Solie, so long from the land of Lincoln. Have a good night, guys.
Thanks, Larry. Good to hear from you again. All right. Our phone number is 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad, and that'll let us know that you want to be on the program. We got Javier coming up in a little bit. I do want to, since we're talking about Darby and Hardy, we got some emails on that. I just want to throw a couple out here. Let's see. This is David, who said Owen Hart would have laughed at those idiotic spots and prank called them in the hospital. I feel embarrassed that Martha had to sit through that. She doesn't need to see a fool leave in an ambulance. Is there something to be said for it being distasteful for there to be a gigantic spot from a high place with a crash landing and the wrestlers, taking that approach to the match? Or is it just completely separate things, what happened with Owen and the rappelling from the ceiling and that? What do you think about what David had to say there?
Well, I can understand where he's coming from, but I think we are talking about very different situations. This was a case where these, clearly Darby and Jeff, volunteered and wanted to take these risks. And I think with all the information we've learned about the circumstances of Owen's death over the years, you find that, there was a lot of hesitance on his part, and, he had a bad feeling about it and felt compelled to go through with it anyway. And so I don't think we're talking apples to apples with these two things. Now, I would hope that, if Martha was unwilling or did not want to see those types of stunts, they would have at least given her a heads up that they were happening, and so she could, find someplace else to be, that kind of thing.
I talked to Ed Farrar and Vince Russo for the Ultimate Insiders DVD series back, over a dozen years ago. We filmed the interview out in Los Angeles, and they talked in depth about, that the interactions with Owen and if they had regrets and gave their first-person perspective on that. Those DVDs are out there if you're interested in hearing their take. That was the first time that they had sat down with each other and talked about that night. And you could tell it was a real emotional thing that they were part of that night and part of, the sequence and the booking and all of that led to Owen's death. It is a there's a lot that WWE did during this process that is shameful, and how they handled the Owen situation, and it's been documented. But this whole thing is, the tragedy of Owen's death is first and foremost and predominantly the tragedy here. But the way WWE handled it afterwards, I wish it didn't make me feel about WWE the way that it does when I think about the way that they dealt with all the fallout and the Hart family. And I think, I know there's people who are like, oh, Martha, she kept Owen out of the Hall of Fame. But I've always been on Martha's side that her not coming back, The more you know about how that was all handled after the fact, the more you understand why Martha doesn't want WWE using her late husband's name in any kind of marketing the way that AEW did. And I think this her coming out and endorsing and being part of this tournament shows that she's not anti-pro wrestling. She just didn't want in any way to validate or seem to forgive WWE for a situation that, from her perspective and in so many ways from, I think, anybody who's kind of followed the story, a lot of perspectives, what was not something WWE should be proud of. All right, we'll move on to other calls here and go to Hinton in London, Ontario next. Hinton, thank you so much for calling. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Hey, guys. Hey, Jake. Good to have you on. I haven't heard from you in a while, so this is great. I just have one topic that I want to get to today, and that involves Ricky Starks. I saw the match with Jungle Boy today. I thought it was fine, but I just can't shake this feeling that this guy is below where he needs to be, even given the constraints of being on a roster with Punk, Danielson, and Cole. Now, I think, I don't rate him as highly as you do. I think he's being carried by the FTW title and vice versa, to be honest with you, because those are the only matches he ever wins, and those are the only matches he even looks semi-strong in. I mean, I've seen this guy, you know, doing the hits and misses for Rampage, competing on Rampage. I've seen him give Keith Lee like 3 shots with a chair, which he no-sells, only for Hobbs to clothesline him, which he does sell. And even on, you know, on commentary, I think he's so counterproductive in that he constantly shills for, you know, the baby faces. And over time, if you're a consistent Rampage viewer, I think it sort of takes this effect on you that this guy is not, you know, he's not even trying, because it's like, okay, if you're getting limited TV time, then commentary is one way for you to get yourself over. But he's not even trying to, you know, get himself over on commentary. He's not even trying to push back against, you know, Jericho's just overwhelming, just overshadowing of all the other announcers. And when he does get promo time, I don't think he's better than what a standard heel can do. What do you guys make of Ricky Starks's position so far? Hello?
I'm still here. I don't know if Wade's on mute or if he disappeared. That's a.
I think I offended him with my Starks rant.
Well, I guess I'll answer your.
Sure. Are you disconnected too? Hello? Hello? Hello?
Hinton, can you hear me? I'm not sure if I'm connected back or not.
Yes, sir, I hear you. Hello?
All right. Yes, we had as I said, we had storms coming through. We just had lightning flash and everything shut down briefly, including our internet and my computer. But I restarted everything. I did not hear most of what you said.
I was worried. Sorry for the laughter. I went on a bit of a Ricky Starks rant, and I thought you got offended by that and went to play. Is Jake back? Hello?
Oh, hey, now I'm back. Can you hear me again?
Is Jake? I hear you fine. Is Jake?
Good, all right. No, I'm trying to get Jake back, too. There's Jake. Or no, not yet. Hey, Jake.
Hey, Wade.
We still got Hinton. I think the internet took longer to reset than my computer, but we are back. Hinton, if you want to repeat briefly what you said when things kind of flashed off or pick up where you left off, that'd be great.
Well, I think Jake heard it, right? And Jake was about to respond when you disconnected. I was just ranting about Ricky Starks. So if Jake wanted to say that,
yeah,
then I'll...
Yeah,
no, I heard the question. I think I might be quite a bit higher on Starks than you are, Hinton. I think he's fairly proficient on the microphone when they've given him the ability to talk. You know, I think he typically delivers in the ring, even though he doesn't probably win as much as he should. I see a lot of potential there. Now, has he been portrayed the best on television always? No. I think I agree with you there that he has, you know, the way that he's been booked at times has diminished him and that FTW championship with the amount of losses that he's taken. Personally, I don't know why the FTW championship has to exist at this point in a company with this many other championships. It seems kind of superfluous. So if anything, I would say retire that thing and let, you know, Ricky Starks and Hobbs, you know, become an accomplished tag team. I think they could find a lot of success there.
Yeah, I mean, the FTW title is a separate subject, but yeah, I'd be very happy with that not being a defended and recognized title, unofficial or not. I'm also definitely higher on Starks. I didn't have a chance, unfortunately, to pay close attention to, or I got to pay close attention to part of it, but not all of it, as I said, because of the storms rolling through and having to move around and catch up and fast forward a couple spots during the show. But yeah, I thought it was a big win for Starks and a showcase moment for him on Dynamite, because so often on Dynamite he has, or so often in AEW he's been a color commentator on Rampage, but not in a sort of a featured personality on Rampage some of the time, but not as much on Dynamite. It feels like he's sort of been, you know, sort of like Hook for a while, was sort of just on Rampage, a Rampage exclusive almost. And I'm a big fan of Starks. I think he's got great potential. I say it all the time. He really leaped out and elevated himself on NWA Power. And I would, if I'm AEW, I get what you can out of him. He's in his early 30s. The time to strike is now. He's good, really good in the ring, and I think even better projecting a real distinct personality. And I think he can eventually be an effective babyface too with his ring style and backstory. So I thought this was a good night for him, Hinton, I got to say. But, you know, I appreciate your opinion, and when I watch the match back, I'll kind of keep an eye out for the points you brought up before I got cut off.
Yeah, it wasn't even just so much about this match. It's just overall. If I can follow up on the commentary specifically, though, would you, if you were, say, Starks' agent backstage, would you say, hey, continue going on Rampage commentary and, you know, shilling for the baby faces and, you know, just getting overshadowed by Chris Jericho constantly? Or would you say either withdraw from commentary or try to push back against Jericho a little more, be more of a vociferous heel, kind of like not the modern-day JBL, but JBL from like 06, 07, where he was constantly healing it up on the announce desk. What sort of advice would you give him for a commentary? Because I personally think the commentary thing is going a little counterproductively for him.
Oh, there's way too many people on the commentary table. And Starks, if he was part of a two-man team with Schiavone or Excalibur or Ross, Starks could shine. But having him on a one-hour show with so many other commentators, it just it feels like he's just like been assigned a duty, not as punishment, but sort of like just to give him something to do, but he doesn't really get a chance to do much while he's doing it. Jake, Starks is at risk of becoming the injured guy who does commentary now, like Corey Graves or Jesse Ventura back in the day. And this is Ricky Starks' prime opportunity to be elevated. And he's one of those, you know, sort of AEW originals who would be being leaned on more if it weren't for Christian and Andrade and Aleister Black and Adam Cole and Bryan Danielson and CM Punk. And I just like push him. So I hope this is a start of that. Your thoughts, Jake?
Yeah, I think he's just, you know, he gets lost in the sea of voices on Rampage on commentary, and he's fighting against a lot of strong personalities. And unfortunately, I think he's been, I assume there's some production happening where he's being told to fulfill a role. And unfortunately, it seems to be minimized by some of the other personalities who dominate that commentary team. But I agree with you, Wade. I think if you had him actually portraying his on-screen character more, you know, with that kind of attitude that he carries, in a two-man team, he might find some success. But if I was Ricky, I don't know that I'd insist on continuing on Rampage commentary. I'd want to, you know, fully immerse myself back into being my on-screen character full time, because it seems like he's not quite the same guy on Rampage. And I guess it really just depends on the state of his neck. I mean, he seems to work a lot less frequently than somebody who, you know, somebody else who might be full time in AEW.
Hinton, anything else for us?
Yeah, and, you know, every time Ricky Starks is absent from commentary, I don't even notice he's gone, whereas when Jericho's absent, I always notice that he's gone, right? And it's like, if you were such a charismatic guy, I'd probably notice when you're gone. And Ricky sort of put in a, you know, tough situation, because if he tries to push past Jericho, that might not go over well politically, I suppose. So I'm just wondering what the backstage stuff is like. But anyway, that's all I had to comment on for this show. I'll make way for other callers now. Thanks for taking my call.
Great. Thanks, Hinton. Appreciate it. Our phone lines cleared a little bit during the edited out for those who downloaded the show. A power surge that led to the show shutting down and restarting when I lost power and internet for a few minutes. But we do have Jay from Hartford who called back in. And Jay, appreciate that. Good to hear from you as always. What'd you think of Dynamite tonight?
Hey, good evening. So I thought Dynamite was a decent show. I wanted to speak specifically to Darby and Hardy, and I'll be brief.
Yeah,
I'm actually
in
the middle of pulling up carpet, but I haven't called them in a while.
That is not
already,
fun.
So.
Yeah.
So I wasn't a fan of the. First of all, I feel like as soon as Hardy got there, Jeff Hardy, that is, they rushed right to having him interact with Darby instead of letting it build a little bit. And I get the wanting to kind of, I guess, strike while the iron's hot and not put it off too long, but it was like day one, they went there. The other thing that I had an issue with was having this be the one match in the tournament where it's no rules. So I get the video packages and everything like that, but I feel like they could have, if they were going to have them meet in the tournament, which I wasn't even a fan of that, just build up a one-on-one match between them in the future. But if they were going to have them do that, let them have the normal match and then say, hey, you know what? We know what people really want to see, or, you know, have a reason to be more intense, so to speak. But so, like, will any other match in the tournament now have, you know, stipulations? So that's kind of – what do you think about that?
Jake, I'll throw to you first. What do you think about I asked Tony to make it no rules, and then it just is, you know, no rules. It gives us nothing to complain about if we're sticklers for rules being followed. But it gives us something to complain about if we think there should just be standard rules in a tournament and not a special set of rules for individual wrestlers. Did that stand out to you at all? Do you have an opinion?
You know, I don't know what kind of match these two would have if they just made them work a regular wrestling match. You know, that's the part where it's like, am I a huge fan of, you know, Tony Khan just making an exception for the sake of having a particular kind of dream match? Not necessarily. I think, you know, if you're in a tournament, everybody should be on a level playing field and have the same rules. But in terms of, like, well, if the match would have stunk if they couldn't take shortcuts, I guess I'd rather they bend the rules than deliver a bad main event 2 weeks in a row.
I think Jeff and Darby underestimate the match that they could have if they abided by a 10-second count-out rule and weren't able to use all those props. That said, I think it was a crowd-pleasing match. You know, Jim Ross endorsed it at the end as one of the great Dynamite matches. I do think Tony Khan, we've learned, is more about making the show as good as it can be, regardless of sort of internal logic, consistency of rules. You know, certainly the Young Bucks indulge in that in their tag matches. It's more about, did the crowd pop? Did we make things exciting? Not, did we just break down any sort of consistency to how tag matches work? in order to achieve that. And so that's just part of what AEW is. And I think it bothers some people and it doesn't bother others. I don't think it bothers many people enough to cause them to not watch. You know, like, I mean, you're going to be irritated by some of the loose rules that Jim Ross will occasionally, you know, point out in commentary overtly or more subtly. But you can wish that they were a little more structured, but I don't think it makes the show less entertaining, and I don't think it makes anyone not watch it. And I think that's where Tony would come down. It's just like, maybe some people would care about that stuff and be real strict. That's not Tony Khan. It's weird, you know, when you think about the initial press release, we're going to be a sports league and it's going to be more sports-like. But, you know, they meant different. I think people interpreted that their own way. And in the end, practically speaking, Tony wants to draw ratings. And Jeff Hardy and Darby leaping off of high places onto chairs is in Tony's mind, and probably correctly, going to draw a bigger audience and more buzz and more social media reaction and praise than if they restricted them to a match. I do believe they'd have a good match if they restricted themselves to jumps off the top rope and getting back in the ring after 10 seconds. I think Hardy and Darby can work within that structure and have a really good match. And I think they should feel a pride in taking on that challenge and delivering. And that would have been my choice. I would have pitched that to them if I were Tony Khan. Let's you know, you guys can do a lot, but we can build up to something more later and do it outside of a tournament setting and, you know, maybe on a pay-per-view or, you know, a very heavily hyped match on Rampage or Dynamite. Jay, back to you.
Good point, Wade. Thank you for saying that. I absolutely think Jeff Hardy is capable of a good to great match without stipulation. So I'll go one more topic tonight, and that's Hangman and Punk. Not a fan. I'm not a fan of the way they presented the two of them. Hangman, he cut that promo, I guess it was last week or maybe the week before, that I thought was totally a heel promo. It just seemingly out of nowhere, he wanted to not just have a normal match with Punk, but, you know, destroy him, whatever term he used. So then tonight, Punk comes out, and I don't know that you were supposed to boo Hangman. I think it was just supposed to be him showing more of an edge, but they just did it. They got it wrong, in my opinion. So then tonight, Punk comes out. The crowd's behind him, and out of nowhere, he says, "Well, I know you all don't like me, or I don't know why you don't like me." And the line made no sense. Sounded like a planned line. I mean, I think he's one that they wouldn't normally script for, you know, at least give him a little bit of leeway. But the line didn't even match the reaction that he was getting. People were cheering before he said that.
Yeah.
And he goes, "I don't know why you don't like me." So now are they trying to make Punk the heel in the feud, which also makes no sense because me as a fan, and I think most fans who know his journey, are absolutely waiting for him to get another reign as world champion. You know, I don't want it to be a year or two long reign, you know, but he's a top worker. He's probably their top superstar. I guess ratings indicate that, what have you. I think he deserves a shot at being champion at least one more time. And when he wins that belt, oh my God, talk about the pop, right? So why are we presenting him as a heel saying, "Oh, Long Island, I know you don't like me," when they were clearly cheering? That was a horrible move tonight. So I'll let you have it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we can talk about that specifically and broaden it out too to just the decision, the prudence, the strategy of complicating things with Punk and ripping on the Islanders and being pro Blackhawks and then wearing the antagonizing jersey. And it comes a week after Hangman leaned heel in his promo, which I didn't like. Jake, just what do you think about, Bizarro World Long Island for AEW and the way that it's sort of, I don't know if it interrupted or enhanced what AEW is trying to do with the dynamic with Hangman and Punk. And I'm, you know, trying to take into consideration Hangman had to sit out a week with COVID protocol. But to me, this is a big match. And people like Hangman Page have him be consistent and consistently likable. And people like Punk, let him be consistently likable. This just feels like a battle of two different generations. You know, a guy in his entering his prime and a guy who took time off and is fighting to prove he still is at a similar level to his prime. I just think you tell that story. You don't need this Long Island sidebar thing and you don't need Hangman just suddenly out of character being a jerk last week. Jake.
Yeah, I don't know if Hangman leaned that hard into Punk last week expecting that it would set up the reaction they were going to get this week. Like, I don't know if they were doing a little bit of gamesmanship, you know, because it seemed like they made a conscious choice both with the MJF segment and with Punk here to lean into the expected reaction. And whether or not it ultimately pays off long-term for the story, I guess remains to be seen. But I'd have a hard time believing that there wasn't some thought that, oh, you know, we expect that Punk is going to get booed next week in Long Island. Let's have Hangman lay into him a little bit so that, you know, we can have Punk respond with a similar kind of negativity while we're in Long Island the following week. And I guess we'll have to see, you know, once they actually get in the ring and have a promo segment together and trade barbs and really craft the bulk of, you know, the conflict between the two of them in the ring together, we'll have a better idea of where this is going to end up for the pay-per-view. But I get the impression, at least, you know, based on last week's very sudden shift in attitude for Hangman Page and a similar shift from Punk tonight, that they were, you know, they were trying to anticipate the way that the crowds were going to respond once they had this big show in Long Island.
Yeah. I would have just liked, like I said, a clean, straightforward, don't complicate it, you know, keep it simple, keep people consistent with their characters and let fans choose and let fans cheer. Go ahead, Jay. Oh,
no, I guess I think maybe it was a reaction to things. We over the years we've seen WWE just go into places with hostile crowds and just work through the material as it was written on the page and act completely oblivious and shocked by the crowd reaction. Yeah. And I think maybe this was an attempt to get ahead of that. And, you know, I guess mixed results were bound to be kind of part of that trade-off.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good addressing what Jay specifically brought up there. Jay, any follow-up or anything else you want to bring up?
No, the last thing I'll say, the last thing I'll say is a longtime listener who went VIP a couple months ago, and I've been enjoying it. So I got to wait. You and Jake have a good evening.
Thank you, Jake. Really appreciate it. Awesome.
All right.
Yeah, you too. All right. Let's do this. Javier Machado, PW Torch contributor. It's been too long. Good to have you back. How's it going?
It's going good. How's it going, Wade? How's it going, Jake?
Good. I made it through with power through Dynamite and a good part of the live show here with power until a little surge, but fortunately it was a very brief power outage. So, I consider myself fortunate considering the storm that moved through here tonight.
Yeah, it's good because every single time there's a hurricane, that's like the biggest fear because many, you know, the tornado. It's not really the hurricane that's the bad thing; it's the tornadoes that comes with it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious when the sun rises tomorrow, how many trees are down and what the damage assessment is around here. Because man, those were. We could see on the radar it was coming, and I knew it would be hitting around 8:30 Central, 9:30 Eastern. So I was kind of prepared for some drama tonight, and it certainly came. It was quite the lightning show, too. But anyway, yeah, Javier, what stood out on Dynamite? What do you want to bring up?
I'm glad no one talked about this. The Jericho doing the dark side, the whole dark side of the ring spoof thing.
Yes, yeah.
I love that. I love the fact that they don't forget their history. And Jericho says, wait a minute, this is a promo for MJF. I'm not doing that. How much is he paying me? Okay.
yeah, totally.
I love the whole thing. Love the whole thing.
That was really clever. Jake, did you like that approach? Are you muted, Jake, or do we lose you? Jake, you're muted, I think. I don't think I muted you. Jake left. Why did Jake leave us? That's not very nice. Let me patch him back in here. Javier, is it something you said?
I don't know. Maybe
hey, Jake.
It's fun? I don't know.
Jake,
I suddenly lost audio, so I had to leave and rejoin the call.
I thought it was something Javier said.
No, not at all. I couldn't hear it even if he was ripping on me for 5 straight minutes.
He was, yep. It was pretty gruesome. I was really surprised with a lot of character for Javier, but I'm glad you didn't hear it.
Me too, actually. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. what the heck are we talking about now that we got Jake back?
Dark Side of the Ring.
Yeah. So, Jake, do you think that worked? Was it a distraction? Was it you get points for creativity and it made the segment feel bigger? Where are you on the Dark Side of the Ring spoof? With Jericho, the narrator for the Dark Side of the Ring series, which, by the way, they announced they're done now with that and starting a new wrestling series. But Jericho is the narrator of those. Did you like that? Was it too cute an insider or what?
No, I thought it was kind of a fun satire. I thought it worked well. And it set up what to expect for the rest of the segment, which was, you know, MJF being treated like a hero in his hometown, which is utterly backwards if you go anywhere else. And so, yeah, I thought it was a nice tone-setting, ridiculous spoof to start a rather, you know, preposterous segment. And I think they got the result they were looking for, which was – you know, the crowd being very into MJF and yet still coming alive for Wardlow, you know, finally putting an end to this foolishness at the end of the segment. So I thought that whole segment was pretty good start to finish.
Yeah. MJF, like, trusting Wardlow needed to take off his handcuffs to sign the contract and naively thinking Wardlow would just dutifully let them, you know, put them back on. I mean, I don't know if I want to dissect the logic of Wardlow being this indentured servant to MJF due to a contract that doesn't apply to AEW, but is sort of a subset of a contract that AEW honors, or a third-party contract that AEW honors. And I mean, it's silly in a lot of ways, but Wardlow just plays it in such a deadpan way. And, you know, the idea, I'm fumbling with my pen, I can't sign this contract, and MJF wants him to agree to these terms. And like I said, we could analyze this and go, this doesn't make sense, that doesn't make sense, and that's not how he'd naturally act, and he would be more suspicious. But you can also look at it a different way, which is through the lens of MJF being full of himself and thinking he's the smartest person in the room always, and that he's got this master plan, and he just needed in that moment Wardlow to sign the contract, and then, you know, Wardlow beating up those poor security guys, just doing their job. Once again, yeah, go ahead.
No, I thought it worked because MJF was in a position where he let his guard down because he was being embraced by his people. And so making a stupid mistake like that would be something that would happen to somebody who is kind of in foreign territory where he's like, this so rarely happens to me and people love me here. You know, of course I'm going to be magnanimous and let him sign without his handcuffs on and oop, I fell into the trap. So it worked on that level for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead, Javier.
Yeah, I mean, and just the little things like, you know, him still calling out the poor people, the poors, but you're good.
you
stuff
people
like
in the
that.
Upper deck.
And I mean, and I love the crowd actually, like, the crowd was into it because when he tells him, you know, take off the handcuffs, you hear the crowd saying no. Because they know what's coming up.
They're on his side. So, they're looking out for him. Yep.
So, some people might have issues with the Bizarre World thing, but it worked for the segment. And I also like the fact that they continue the shtick of him putting his opponents through, you know, through a gauntlet. This is the third time now, you know, and call back to what he had Cody go through. So, again, playing off in the history of what they're doing and also sets it up so at some point if MJF wants something from a babyface, the babyface can turn the whole thing on him and make him go through a gauntlet, you know. So I really enjoy the overall build of what they're doing with this.
Jake, what your thoughts on the overall build?
Yeah, it seems like they're replaying the greatest hits, and I'd probably be a lot harder on it if it wasn't working, but it is. And so you can't complain about it too loudly, but I do hope they mix up the formula if they, you know, once they get past Wardlow and MJF moves on to another opponent, they don't just kind of hit the reset button and start doing the same stuff over again. But I don't know if it was an inside joke that made it to the screen, but calling Cody Rhodes the American roller coaster actually got a laugh out of me.
Yes. just a Cody Rhodes reference is very, and, you know, MJF's playing up, you know, the little aside about, you know, a dig at Tony Khan, not wanting to, you know, value him or re-sign him early or treat him well, whatever the storyline is, you know, that might turn into, you know, a Bret Hart sweepstakes reality, that could be shoot, could be work. We'll be left guessing. And to reference that and to continue to plant those seeds and lay the groundwork for that, and slip that in and make it seem like, ooh, is he supposed to say that? How will Tony feel about it? But it fits the character so well. And then to bring up Cody, it's almost like, yeah, he left, and he's over there, and I'm going to bring up his name because he and I will probably be colleagues again someday. There's like sort of that implication too. But, yeah, the American roller coaster, yes, it cracked me up too, Jake. Javier, what did you think? What do you make of Cody?
Yeah, the whole thing was – I think he mentioned because I think the actual line he said was Tony doesn't want to be talking about 2024, I think, which would be
reference his contract. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's when you're pulling from everything you've done and the little things that you've done, it rewards. Because I mean, if you're not really following it closely, you know, it doesn't really matter. It's not taking up too much more than a line that he said, but you're following it closely. You're like, oh yeah, I see where this is, you know, this is going, you know, and it's, and pulling from, you know, the stuff that's already happened, you know, the lashes. I do have to ask you, Wade, I was a bit worried when, with Spears, doing the 10, was this a good use of the fingers?
I mean, if you're Sean Spears, you should want to escape that era, not remind people of it, but I give him credit. He's held off on that just stupid finger flick 10 thing that he leaned on way too hard in NXT. I mean, it fits Spears. He's just such a goof and not a serious person. And so he just took such pleasure in bringing that back, and it at least it fits the role that he's in now. I mean, I was fine with it, but it got the reaction from me that I think, you know, he probably was looking for. What do you think, Jake?
Yeah, I think it, you know, a callback like that works when the whole segment is preposterous, you know, in its presentation. And I think you know, he seemed to enjoy it, and I think it, you know, Wardlow even cracked a smile. You know, it was just a segment full of silly little references and inside jokes and whatnot. So I thought it worked just fine, and I think it fits, you know, the role of a henchman who gets beat up all the time to relish in a period in his career where he had almost no success. It kind of made me laugh.
Yeah. All right, Javier, what else?
Yeah, and just, you know, staying with the Jericho thing, the whole Jericho Appreciation Society, I did think of you when JR asked, why is he screaming?
Yeah,
the mic.
Yeah. Yep. Reference to Matt Menard talked, but Angelo talked before him too, and it was so deadpan of Ross too. Like, why is he screaming? Why is he yelling? Why are they yelling? Like, it's a little old man get off my lawn, but it's also just a pertinent question. Like, can't you just talk into the microphone? And by the way, I probably won't think of mentioning this elsewhere, so I just want to say I like this version of Samoa Joe. The talk soft, carry a big stick, have that intense look in his eye, as opposed to the yelling and frothing at the mouth Samoa Joe, which I've been complaining about since his Impact days when he'd always be produced to just yell. And it's like, no, Joe. Joe is so effective when he just looks at the camera and talks soft. And you stop what you're doing and you listen. And so Joe gets it. Matt and Angelo, they're, you know, they can yell all they want because they're supposed to be annoying and not serious people either. Javier, you're up.
Oh, okay.
was another awkward silence on my part? I apologize.
No, when there's the pause, if I after the pause, you did the right thing, Jake. That's
okay. Because
if I go ahead, Javier, he's going to start talking before he hears that, and then we're going to talk over each other, and it's going to be awkward. So I just know, you know, just if I don't throw to him overtly, be quiet, he'll start talking. You did the right thing, Jake, by not talking. And then, so Javier, it's on you. It's on me for not throwing you officially.
This was a game of chicken, I guess.
Yeah, totally it was, yes. But we have listeners, you know, so I want to think of that.
I'm also glad that now we know how they're going to even up the teams by adding in Moxley and Yuta and Brian. So that should be interesting. So I mean, when is their version of War Games? Is that anytime soon?
Oh, well, they can do it whenever. I mean, I think the COVID kind of threw off whatever the tradition is. Jake, have you heard speculation about that?
I mean, it seems like it would be a little bit too soon to do it at Double or Nothing, but yeah. I guess it's possible. I thought that whole, the way that played out was kind of strange because you had the Blackpool Combat Club come out with separate entrances with the music of the individuals. And then you had Kingston and Santana and Ortiz standing on the apron. And Kingston had, like, full-on, like, Memphis makeup going on with the eye. Like, that was kind of hilarious how bad that looked. It looked like something you would have, you know, put on standard definition television years ago. But the overall presentation, like, I think the crowd would have blew up if Kingston's entrance music would have played. And they would have gone about introducing the characters mm-hmm. in a little bit different order.
Yeah. All right, Javier, back to you.
Do have to say that on Twitter, the one that goes by the handle, very confused about Kota Ibushi right now, did throw a little bit of, shade. Wow, two video packages tonight on Dynamite. Certain folks at PW Torch headquarters are going to be over the moon. So... I realize, you know, I was really happy when they did show promoting the main event after the first match. I agree with you, Jake, that, you know, it would have been better if you, broke it up a little bit and you just kept, reinforcing it throughout the 2 hours. But at least, you know, it's something, so.
I think. There's room for it in the show, and it absolutely makes the match feel more important when there's some elbow grease and pizzazz put into promoting it or just repetition of promoting it. Again, AEW's ratings are not where they should be, and one of the reasons is they're super serving an audience that, you know, reflexively defends everything that they do and not listening to the people or trying to figure out where the people are going, who sample the product and who come back. And, you know, I don't think they're going to lose the people they're super serving by doing things a little more obviously logically when it comes to making the big stars and the big matches feel more important and catching people up who don't live on Twitter and aren't watching all the YouTube specials, catch them up and remind them, you know, why this match matters. It's just, to me, it's just so obviously the thing to do. I don't really think it's something we should be debating. But, you know, in some circles we are. But I think the people who don't want that, are thinking about AEW a lot more than that second million that aren't watching right now, that AEW's next level of success is going to come from attracting and making them feel invested in what's happening. And AEW's got to do a little bit more to make that happen. And this was a step in the right direction.
Well, the dialogue around, well, not just AEW, but wrestling in general online is impossible to engage with for the most part. Like, if you're you know, criticizing AEW in any meaningful way or vice versa for WWE, it takes less than 2 seconds for five people to pull up in a car with bats and beat you senseless.
Totally,
for,
yes.
For minor opinions, just like I can understand why, you know, people who, you know, just kind of dabble in wrestling and leave immediately do so, because it's just impossible to even say anything without being pummeled by online commenters. It's a difficult thing to get into as a fandom. Like there other television shows don't have that same problem at all.
And I just think Dynamite should be a show that someone can tune in for 2 hours a week and watch and feel like they know what's happening, and the promotion does, you know, the logical and obvious things to catch them up and remind them and reinforce and underline certain points. I'm not talking about, you know, a 17-minute video package, but there's things that they can do that break a little bit from you know, the we're so scared we're going to lose someone if we aren't just pointing the camera at the ring or something live happening backstage. And but anyway, yeah, my point is made, and I think this show was a step in the right direction, and they did a better job promoting the main event, and I thought that was noteworthy. You know, we still and they've done a better job with like the rapid fire Excalibur plugs for, you know, months now. They've been in the middle of running down the matches for Rampage. They break away and do a video package or a promo, and then they come back and add a couple more matches. It's still, you know, a lot, and I still think it's insane that they don't augment, supplement, enhance Excalibur and all the things he's saying with better visuals. And this was, you know, they had some visuals here, but traditionally there's a lot of times where it's just a lot of things flashing at you, and it's just too much. You know, I mean, the human mind, the average viewer, I don't know. I just don't think it serves them. So I think they could do a better job with the visuals as Excalibur plugs things, making it make more sense so we know what show it's on. I thought that this tonight was a little bit better, or was better than it's been in the past, though, in a couple key ways. So I just want to see AEW just, you know, seeming like they're willing to reflect on what they're doing and looking for ways to improve. And you know, I think we saw signs of that on the show. I don't think it was just chance or happenstance. Anyway, Javier, back to you.
Yeah, I made note of that when Excalibur was plugging the stuff that was coming up, and I thought it was a rib on him because they were moving through through all the, you know, match screens so fast that he was barely catching up, and you could tell that he was speeding like super speed talking. And I think they're doing this on purpose at this point, because like it's almost like, okay, normally it'll take you 30 seconds to say all these. We need you to do it in 15, okay?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
I, you know, because it's – I'm like – and he's almost tripping over his words. I'm like, you know, sometimes take a deep breath.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to mention was the three finishes. I really like the ending to the first match, Cole winning with the sharpshooter. Because that was just unnecessary, you know. you know, considering the fact that, you know, the whole FTR currently, you know, they're you know, an obsession, but you know, their infatuation with the Hart stuff, and you know, they've been talking a lot about that. The fact that Cole wins with the sharpshooters like was like a, you know, big, you know, screw you to them.
Yeah, Jake, what do you think?
Well, you know, it was essentially, you know, the fandom Olympics in the opening match, because you have Cole, who's like, you know, a follower of HBK in a sense. And, of course, you have Dax, who is a Bret Hart super fan. And they kind of had a Bret-Shawn match in a way.
Yeah.
You know, they followed a lot of the same patterns. And so I guess, you know, the way it ended with the sharpshooter, and I think, you know, a solid bit of selling from Dax on the ribs. It was a very good story told in an opening match. I didn't think it quite reached, like, you know, peak AEW in terms of, you know, some of the best matches we've seen on Dynamite, but for a tournament opener, it was certainly a solid encounter. But yeah, the Hart and HBK vibes were heavy around that whole match.
Yeah. The pace in the early minutes is, you know, wasn't like electrifying. And it's, you know, AEW settling in going, here's what we do, and we do it well, and you can relax and watch us. And it's just such a different approach to then the frenzied match plugs from Excalibur, where they're just like this frenzied desperation to not bore people for 10 seconds or they'll flip the channel. Yet, you know, they put Dax, who's not a firmly established dynamic babyface act. He's a, you know, most recently a heel who is now, you know, transitioning into a different role in the company. But they're letting them have a pretty long match that you know, is upshifting slowly, and they're not worried about losing viewers or having it be something really engaging and interesting for their core audience, but maybe not you know, enough to excite the audience that they're chasing and that they want to grow into having as weekly viewers. So and sometimes I'm not against just being who you are and not seeming desperate and just bouncing all over the place, this was a nice match. It's a little curious to choose that as the pace for the first 5 minutes of your show, though. Javier, anything else you want to add?
The second finish I noted was the finish to Darby and Hardy, where it, correct me if I'm wrong, but if I'm misremembering, but I believe this is how Darby lost to Cody in their first match, was Cody leveraged the coffin drop into that. So I'm wondering if this means that there's going to be a second, like, real match between these two down the road.
Yeah, I think that's – Jake, does that ring a bell with you? Because I think Javier's spot on that.
Yeah, I think that was the finish to their first match. Although, maybe was the first match the 15-minute time limit one, or is that – am I misremembering? It's probably immaterial. But, yeah, one of their matches ended with a coffin drop into a crucifix, just like this one. I would not be surprised at all if this leads to a series of matches between these two.
Yeah, good observation up here.
And then the third match that I had was the ending to the Jungle Boy Starks match, which was a distraction finish. And I understand what they're doing. And, like, in a vacuum, I'm going to be badly quoting Todd Martin in this probably, but in a vacuum, I'm like, I understand, you know, you have this thing. It looks like they're setting up a three-way match between the teams involved. It's a distraction finish in, you know, when you see, like, if you're watching other promotions, you've already seen 30 of them this week and it's only Wednesday.
Yeah. Yep. Javier, anything else for us?
Nope. That's pretty much it.
Cool. Awesome. Anything you want to plug?
Not right now. I just want to go to bed. I'm tired.
I totally get it. Thanks, Javier. Appreciate you joining us here. I just want to go to bed. All right. Frank Pediani called and is on hold. He attended tonight. He stayed through Rampage. Frank, thanks for calling us as you're making your way to your car.
Wade and Jake, what is going on, my friends? How are you this evening?
Good. I'm alive. We had storms come through.
So are we. Say hi to Aaron. Aaron was super tonight. She is exhausted.
Hello.
Hey.
She is exhausted. We had a little what's that?
Frank, our first on-site correspondent's girlfriend was asleep in the car when he talked to us earlier in the show.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah.
Well,
I won't be too far behind.
Yeah.
Well, this is pretty much the only wrestling that she would stay awake for. I mean, usually when we watch Dynamite or Rampage or the other company, you know, she's pretty much asleep by the first match. But, you know, she's a mom, and it's understandable, you know.
Yeah. So
I don't want to talk about
Rampage. If you say anything about Rampage, Frank, just give people a little spoiler alert. But otherwise, just talk about the show. Or take it where you want.
Rampage, you want the spoilers or you don't want this? I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
Well, either way, I just wanted to jump in and say if you do, we just want to let callers know that, you know, just go, hey, folks, I'm about to talk about Rampage. But talk about, maybe say spoilers for last if there's anything else you want to bring up about the in-person experience tonight.
Yeah, I mean, after going to SmackDown the other night and after going to Dynamite, it's two vastly different shows. You know, like, SmackDown is definitely written for TV, as I talked about on my little show, you know, the other day when I talked about the experience. When you go to Dynamite, you feel like you're at a live wrestling show. Like, we didn't get any of the promos. We got the Jeff Hardy promo. We got the Frankie and the Scorpio. We got that. And Aaron told me there was one promo, I think it was after the Ricky Starks match. She couldn't remember what it was, but we didn't get anything in between. And I'm sure they ran promos in between every match. We didn't get that in the arena. Like, by the time that they announced Rampage, you know, we had no idea what the matches were. Usually, you know, as you watch Dynamite, you know, they set stuff up and stuff like that. but we didn't get any of that. We didn't know what Rampage was until they started making the announcement. I mean, like, I knew Frankie and Scorpio were going at it. They talked about that last week. What's their name? They're Ruby and Riho. You know, we knew about that, but we didn't know about the other matches. Not that, you know, there was anything noteworthy or anything like that, but so that was missing from the arena. As far as the in-person experience, there were a lot of shout-outs. Like, Justin was really trying to give shout-outs to the crowd. Like, at one point, he was talking to sections, you know, all the 200 sections and things like that, and then the 100 sections, they went to ours, and, you know, we responded, and he was talking about some of the, like, the crew members and stuff. So I thought that was really cool. I thought that was cool, acknowledging, like, the workers, you know, people making it happen in the arena. And things like that. The Jumbotron, it was very inconsistent as far as its use. Like, sometimes they used it, sometimes they didn't. And yeah, the cutoff, that was kind of noticeable. Like, you know, when you watch the television, you could see the little insets, like, later tonight, you know, this match or whatever. And then, like, in the upper right hand corner, you have the hashtag, and like, that was partially cut off. And, you know, I don't know what the deal is with AEW production. I think you talked about it. I think you and Todd talked about it. Maybe you and Rich, I don't remember. But, you know, there's a lot of little things that, you know, WWE does a lot better as far as production is concerned than AEW does it. I mean, it was a little better this time than what it was last time when they were in UBS. Maybe they're getting used to the arena. Who knows? But those are the things that were noticeable. Like, who is it that somebody went out and hugged somebody during Rampage. I think it might have been Ruby. And, like, they didn't show it on the Jumbotron, but then they, like, after the hug was done, I guess it was somebody, I don't know if it was a father or something like that, but, like, you know, then they, like, showed behind the ring, but you didn't see what was going on between Ruby and whoever she was talking to. So just little things like that. But overall, I mean, it was a really good experience. It was enjoyable. People were into it. And people were engaged throughout the entire night.
Yeah, Frank, go ahead and get into Rampage spoilers with proper warning for everybody here. You know, anything else you want to say about that?
Okay, so with Rampage, spoiler alert, of course, you probably won't see this on TV, but Jericho came out after Tony talked about Rampage. This thing, you know, he said it'll be a great night, and they have a surprise for us later on in the evening. We actually left because we got to a point where, like, we have to leave. Like, we got to relieve my mother. She's watching the kids. So anyway, my personal life aside, Chris Jericho came down. He railed down the crowd after what happened on the show. He said we're not allowed to sing. We're banned from singing Judas anymore. So he was pretty pissed. And then they went to the Rampage intro. We got the intros in the arena. I'm assuming you're not going to see it on the TV for The Butcher and the Blade and Mark Quinn against Death Triangle. That's it. Death Triangle wins. Match went about 7 or 8 minutes. To be perfectly honest, Wade, at one point we wanted to get merchandise, and we didn't really see a good time. This was the time that we saw. So we went up and we got our shirts. But they had, like, the one nice thing about the UBS Arena is they got a lot of TVs in, you know, in the concession area and things like that. So if you're getting up, you can actually watch what's going on. So we were able to keep up with the I mean, you can't hear it as well. I mean, you can't hear the commentary, but, yeah. So you could still keep up with the match. And then they went to Rio and Ruby Soho. Fairly decent match. There was actually people going, "Let's go Riho, Riho sucks." I don't know what that was all about.
Wow.
And I'm sitting there, I'm talking to one of the guys in front of me. I'm like, what have we got, John Cena in here? Like, this, you know, this is Riho. I mean, you know, no disrespect to Riho. But, yeah, so Ruby won that. Crowd was kind of dead. They got into it towards the end as the match picked up. And then I talked about the embrace that Ruby did. Like I said, we didn't see it on the Jumbotron. It was just weird how they did it. Let's see what else. They did the Jade Cargill interview. Crowd was into that. I get the sense that Jade's turning babyface at some point, and I think the crowd wants that, you know, so we'll see what happens there. I might be speaking out of order because they did their Bronson and Sean Spears. They actually might have done that before Ruby and Riho, so I apologize if I have that out of order. You know, we got the intros. You know, I was just mad for that. You know, they were into the chair shots, but, you know, whatever. Let's see. Yeah, that was on Dynamite. Just trying to see what happened in between. Justin cut to Mark Henry. There wasn't really anything noteworthy in between that they did exclusively for the audience. I feel like, and this happened the last time we went to Dynamite, I feel like they really didn't do anything exclusive for the audience, just the Jericho thing that I mentioned. And then and then went to the main event bit. The crowd was into the, and it's time for the main event. I'm pretty much over it, but that's another story. And then they had the match. The section around me, there were a couple of comments, especially the guy in front of me, like, who are we supposed to cheer? Who are we supposed to boo? So I don't know if the entire story is working, you know, with Scorpio turning on Frankie and, you know, then Sammy getting involved. I mean, I guess, you know, Frankie's a baby face, but, like, what are we supposed to like, you know? And there were not just the guy in front of me. There were comments around me. So there's your Rampage spoilers. I mean, you know, action was fine, but, you know, Wade, you get to a point, you get tired, especially after that Darby Jeff match. You know, you spent. Then Tony comes back out. We got a match. It might go long. It might not. You know, we'll see. It was friggin' Chaos Project against Swerve and Keith Lee. We're like, are you kidding me? Match went about, like, 5 minutes. Which is about 4 or 5 minutes too long, man. This thing should have been a squash. And Luther and Swerve are doing, like, these finger pokes, like, with one finger, then two, and then three. And then there's chance, like, who gives a crap? Let's go. We want to go home. You know, people are getting impatient. So I don't know what the motivation was to put this dark match on it was for dark.
That's,
so it's going to air on dark.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah, that's weird.
You know, Tony, you talk to Tony, you know how he is. He gets to a point, you know, it's just too much. And then and we got a surprise. It'll send everybody home happy, and it was MJF. Now, way to be perfectly honest, you know, like, we probably stayed longer than what we wanted. We got to leave because we got to go relieve my mother. But, you know, we heard him come out, and, you know, he was asking if the crowd had a good time and this and that. And we didn't really hear the rest. I've been talking like Elmer Fudd there, but yeah, it was just basically MJF, and that was the way they closed out the show last time. I remember sending you a video after we talked, after we did your focus on AEW. There was like a 6-minute video with MJF, and that's what they did this time. So I mean, that's, you know, I get it. He's from Long Island and everything, but, you know, probably works against the storyline that they're trying to do.
Cool, Frank. I appreciate it. Anything else you want to add at all about your experience tonight?
No. I mean, specifically, I mean, did too much walking. Yeah, we made a bad choice of parking, but that's, you know, that's our problem.
That's cool.
As far as Tony did his thing before Dynamite. He came out, pretty much just psyching up the crowd and. You know, he was just excited to see everybody. And then as far as the matches, I mean, like I said, the only promos we got were Jeff Hardy. And the crowd was in the Moxie. I would say as far as who was over the most, it was definitely Moxley. He got a huge pop. Eddie got a huge pop. And I would say probably Jeff, right? I mean, you know, the whole Punk thing. I'm sure you guys talked about the whole Punk thing on the show. I'm curious to see how what people's opinions were on that. But he got a pretty negative reaction with the Jonathan Tavares jersey, which is a sore subject for Islander fans. But, you know, I don't know if you want to get into that.
We talked about it earlier, and the show's running real long, so we're just fine not getting into that again. It's a pretty localized thing.
No, I don't blame you. I don't blame you.
Yeah, yeah. All right, cool. Well, Frank, thank you. I'm glad you did have the energy to give us a call.
No problem. I'm probably going to cut something like I did for SmackDown, just to go into a little more detail as to what happened on the show. So look for that here.
Yeah, that'd be great.
In a couple of days.
All right,
no problem.
Frank. Yep, Frank Fediani and Aaron, who may or may not be awake still, joining us.
I am still awake, actually.
Yeah, we appreciate it. And, thanks for the Rampage spoilers and the insights. And look for Frank's report at pwtorch.com and Wrestling Then and Now, a PW Torch VIP exclusive podcast. Frank, thanks. Have a good night.
No problem. And, Jake, have a good night, my friend.
You too, Frank.
All right. We will wrap up quickly with an email or two. We'll just zip through and then sign off. Ed in High Desert, California said, good evening, Wade and Jake. With Darby and Jeff Hardy, what was the point of the match? It was part of the Owen Hart tournament. Yet from the promos, did either mention the importance of advancing? They talked about stunts. The match starts and it's all about stunts. It wasn't even really about winning the match. And man, another big spot that misses. And that leads me to AEW adding gimmicks to the tournament. They cheapen it. The Joker spot and now turning a match into anything goes just because. The gimmick of the tournament is Owen is back in wrestling and him that Owen is Owen's name is back in wrestling and he's being honored. This is the first go-round. It doesn't need any of that. It needs, as you mentioned, short video packages each week telling the early wrestling story of the up-and-coming Owen. With the Jericho Quagmire adding BCC to it, doesn't that, again, kind of push Santana and Ortiz to the side again? Which was one reason they were splitting from Jericho. And in the overall story, doesn't that kind of push them aside? Which still doesn't seem to be helping them take a step forward. Have to see how this plays out, but feels they're pushed aside again. And oh, did Eddie Santana and Ortiz need backup? Sure, it was 5-on-3, but it wasn't 5 real guys. I was thinking that too. And when is the MJF Wardlow stuff playing out? Are the whipping and cage match happening on Dynamite, or is this all for the pay-per-view? Thanks for all the VIP content. Glad nothing major happened to you from the tornado, and kudos to working through it. Thanks for the hard work. Jake, anything you want to reply to there on a few key points from Ed?
Yeah, I hear what he's saying about the lack of importance of the tournament and winning. I did find it a little odd that, you know, even with the main event that got a video package, we didn't hear either Jeff Hardy or Darby talk anything about what Owen Hart or the tournament meant to them. You know, I think the initial video package that described the tournament and had some of the participants in it touched on, you know, how much Owen meant to wrestling and some of the talent in particular. But man, I think, you know, Jeff knew Owen and wrestled matches with him. Yeah, I would have thought they would have had a couple of words from him along the way there.
All right. Then we've got JB from Detroit. I see a lot of similarities in Darby and Jeff Hardy. They were both young, high flyers who aren't necessarily great on the mic, but have a certain it factor and darker charisma that got them over to the fan base and turned them into stars. My question is, do you think Darby Allin's ceiling is at Jeff Hardy's level, higher than Jeff or lower than Jeff? And also, if you're watching that match, will either guy be able to walk in their 50s? Love the show and go VIP. You know, I know there's people who just go, let us enjoy this match, but we've seen too many wrestlers, and you know, including Dynamite Kid, end up with major, major health problems later in life from, you know, feeding the fans what they want and the fans, you know, just, you know, chanting this is awesome and holy shit and all that stuff. And I think it's worth just having, you know, a moment of a sober moment to going, let's keep in mind, these are real human beings who are, you know, kind of feeding the not bloodlust, but the stunt lust of a fan base. And, you know, you have to decide if that's okay with you because it's okay with them. And that's fine, but I don't resent that there are people who are emailing and calling bringing that up, I guess is my point. You can say, hey, they know what they're doing, live in the moment, and if they can't walk in their 50s, they might not care. They might think it was absolutely worth it to do what they've done in their 20s, 30s, and now with Jeff Hardy well into his 40s. So, yeah, Jake, any thoughts on the points he met there, including, I think, most specifically, Darby's upside compared to Jeff?
Yeah, I guess it's a debate that would probably have to extend, you know, long beyond the scope of time we have for this call. But I think the you know, do promoters have a duty to protect wrestlers from themselves is an interesting question to ponder. You know, I don't know what risk is too much risk for someone to take, and where do you draw that line? And I'm sure there are people much smarter than me who have worked in wrestling for, you know, decades who could probably better answer that question than me. But I think the preponderance of opinion from older talent is that they wish they had saved some of those spots for later in their lives. And I hope Darby Allin doesn't have those regrets, you know, 15, 20 years from now.
Well put. All right, Zach in Texas. Finally, we'll close here. The show opened with a great pro wrestling match between Adam Cole and Dax Harwood and ended with Jeff Hardy and Darby Allin attempting to murder themselves and each other. I was legit surprised that Jeff won, so that was nice. Everything in the middle was fantastic, too. Punk trolling Long Island will never get old. The Hookhausen angle was short, simple, and effective. The dynamic is a sitcom I'd absolutely watch. Oh, that's pretty funny. It's like 21st Century Perfect Strangers. Or I guess you could say Odd Couple. The Blackpool Combat Club helping Eddie Kingston and company beat the tar out of JAS. Yes, please, and thank you. Wardlow continues to be a star, and I can't wait to see him powerbomb Sean Spears. Insert 10-finger flash here. Don't do that. Tony Storm and Jamie Hayter was really good. I will never understand WWE thinking Tony Storm was only worth being pied in the face. I thoroughly enjoyed this episode of Dynamite Tonight. Jake, anything you want to add to any of that? I think we talked about Hook Danhausen, but you could expand on that a little bit or anything else you brought up.
I don't know if, you know, I kind of waffle back and forth about Hook Danhausen. On one hand, I'm like, man, can we keep Hook away from the meme wrestlers? Because I think his development could be limited if he gets defined into that category, you know. But again, you know, it seems to be working, and so I don't know how loudly you can really complain about it. It seems like he got one of his better reactions in recent weeks on this show, and some of that is likely due to it being, you know, close to his hometown. But I think, you know, the angles with Danhausen are at least introducing an element of personality to a pretty, you know, somewhat reserved character. And so I think it is working on some level. I guess when it comes to the Jericho Appreciation Society, I'm still struggling to figure out what the point is. and I think they are too. You know, I think the funniest part of that whole segment tonight, I actually got a laugh out of, you know, they have Matt Menard do kind of a brief promo, you know, before Jericho's Judas music hits. And he kind of gave this very serious delivery about how they had been, you know, for the past 9 weeks, they had been proving the superiority of, you know, sports entertainers over pro wrestlers. And, I get kind of a kick out of that, but I don't get the impression that this act is supposed to be a joke. And so I don't know what to make of it yet. And I think overall, you know, the stuff they've been doing with Kingston and Santana and Ortiz has left me feeling pretty cold over the past few weeks. I just haven't been able to get into it. And then in regards to Storm and Hayter, yeah, I liked the match, but it felt like they were rushing to the finish because there was sequences as they got late in the match where they just abandoned all selling. Like, you know, you had Storm hit a DDT in the ring, and then she hit a second DDT on the floor, and then she quickly threw Hayter back into the ring, and they did a cross body spot, and then Hayter kicks out, and then 2 seconds later she's back on offense like nothing happened to her. And it's just like, you know, I could live without stuff like that. And I think they're both very talented, and I don't want to make it sound like I didn't like the match, but it's like I don't know why you're working on fast forward in some of those situations. But overall, I enjoyed the match up until the last, you know, maybe 30 seconds to a minute, because it felt like they just kind of put the whole thing on fast forward.
All right, very good. Jake, tell people how they can follow you on social media and hear and read more from you during the times in between your co-hosting gigs here.
Yeah, you can find me over at prowrestling.net. I do a weekly report on Dynamite that corresponds with Wade's report over at The Torch. I also do a weekly podcast, .NET Weekly, which is the flagship show for members over at ProWrestling.net with Jason Powell. And I also join Jason for audio reviews of WWE and AEW pay-per-views. And you can follow me on Twitter at BarnettJake with two T's.
Excellent. Speaking of Twitter, follow me on Twitter at TheWadeKeller and follow our brand at PWTorch. Jake, thanks so much. Always great talking wrestling with you.
Always a pleasure. Thanks.
Thanks. Yep. And thanks to our listeners, our on-site correspondents, our emailers, and all our listeners. Until next time, Wade Keller signing off.